What some believe started as an executive success growth program would eventually turn into one of the darkest cult stories in recent American history. A cult where on the surface all may seem well, but upon a closer look, something secret is going on. Something very dark and unthinkable. Today, the story of Keith Raniere and Nexium.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is the Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Keith Alan Raniere, also known as Vanguard, is an American convicted felon and the founder of Nexium, a multi-level marketing company and cult based near Albany, near New York, between 1998 and 2018. Nexium developed a following primarily through its personal development seminars, recruiting several celebrities and socialites. However, the organization also faced multiple accusations of systematic sexual abuse of female members by Raniere and members of his inner circle, leading to arrests of Raniere and other Nexium members in early 2018. Raniere has subsequently been characterized in media reports as a cult leader. On June 19, 2019, Raniere was convicted of federal crimes, including sex trafficking of children, conspiracy, and conspiracy to commit forced labor, all related to a secret society within Nexium known as DOS, or The Vow. Raniere is scheduled to be sentenced on October 27, 2020. He faces a mandatory minimum prison term of 15 years and a possible life sentence. So this is the Dark Side of Wikipedia. Today's episode about Keith Raniere and Nexium. I found this story very fascinating. I first really kind of heard more about it. I remember bits and pieces in the news over the past couple of years, but I didn't really jump into it until I started watching The Vow, the documentary on HBO. And it just drew me in because I'm always, for some reason, attracted to cults, not in a way of like, hey, I want to join the cult and let's have some Kool-Aid, but it just in like, how the hell does this work? Because I want to start my own. But no, just more like, how does this work? I'm just fascinated with the psychology of it. Carol Hughes with us on today's episode of Dark Side of Wikipedia. What's your knowledge on this too? I mean, you've gone down the podcast route so far on this.
Well, first off, I think Nexium sounds like some skincare products.
Yeah.
That's because I like really, it does, doesn't it?
It sounds very safe.
Nexium, and my skin looks great.
Yeah, it's like proactive. You know, if proactive was a cult, which in some ways people think it is.
But the funny thing is, I never know in advance what we're going to talk about. So I just like get online here with you and we talk about whatever it is that you decided we're talking about.
Yeah.
So what's so funny is last weekend I was doing yard work and I wanted a new podcast to listen to. So I dove into this podcast. I think it's called Uncover. And so I start listening to this podcast about this same thing.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. And then you tell me tonight, that's what we're going to talk about. So
it's fascinating.
Yeah, I listened to about 2 hours or more of a podcast. Like I got addicted and I'm with you. I don't know why I'm fascinated by cults. Like, I kind of think Scientology is one too.
Oh, yeah. And 100%.
The Leah Remini special.
Love
like,
him.
I was about that. Yeah. Well, it wasn't a special, it was a series.
Yeah.
But, like, listening to all of that, like, they get you in and then it's really hard to get out. But at the same time, you know, like, this one, and I'm sure you'll get into it, but there's this for $500 or something like that, you get this 5-day course.
Yeah.
And we're going to start, you're going to live your authentic life and you're going to become this wonderful person. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's a lot of people looking for that.
Yeah.
And So then you spend that, and they're like, okay, well, now we'll get them to spend a little more and a little more. And that's just what Scientology does, too.
Yeah, it's the course and the ladder path. And the thing is, you look at these things, and on the bottom levels, like the base stuff, the like feel good stuff, I mean, I totally believe in self-improvement too. But unfortunately, like most of the time, these self-improvement things turn into cults. But I was thinking, like what if it's a shame, like Keith Raniere just didn't stop there, because he had a lot of like good ideas and really truly, you know, other than the horrible shit that he was doing, but before it got into that path, he really actually was helping people. They were feeling good and better and they were living a very good life, and it wasn't like get away from your family or anything like that, like Scientology. And then it took a very dark turn. And then all of a sudden he realized he had this kind of control over these people, and then it went really fucked up. But it's like, if he just stopped at where you were supposed to stop, at help them find who they want to be and feel good about that and have self-confidence, and that's your job, you're good. Stop the cult. Doesn't turn into a cult. Make it a business if you want. Make some money out of it, sure. But that's it. That's, you know, that's fine. That's a business. That's a self-help thing. But it always goes so much further. It's like, I don't know. Then you try and think of other ones that are like, you know, truly like scandal-free that are out there. And I really can't think of anything other than like authors.
But you know, this one, and I think Scientology is the same way to an extent.
Yeah, it is.
This one was definitely built as that. Oh, you just said the term, like the multi-tiered marketing.
Yeah, multi-level marketing things. Yeah.
Yeah. So you do this, and then you get these other people to join in. I guess there's like, you know, makeup places that are the same way. It's like, sure, I'm going to sell this really Avon awesome makeup, and then I get these women to sell makeup under me, and they get women to sell makeup under them.
Yeah.
But it's the same sort of concept with a lot of money involved.
Yeah.
And that weird, like, we're going to help you achieve some sort of perfect life or something. Well, I don't know.
It preyed on people who, yeah, it preyed on people who felt like they needed something.
You know, because Scientology is the same way. Yeah. Like, you start here, and then you have to pay so much money to get to this point. Yeah. And then in anywhere along that route, they could say, you know what, you're not doing so good, and you got to go back and take this one again.
Yep.
And so it's kind of like that. But it was so fascinating, this podcast I've been listening to, this woman, how innocently you can get into it. And that there's red flags and there's signs and everything that as you look back on it, you see it. But in the moment, like, I don't want to let these people down. These are my family, you know?
Yeah.
And it's fascinating to me. So it's just done in a slow, methodical process where he's getting uber rich.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of these people aren't, because they can't keep the other people coming in fast enough to give them the money to spend that they need to spend.
Yep.
And it's just this sick, twisted. And then the guy at the top is getting rich, and the people around him, and they don't care.
No, it's how these things work. I mean, it's why like pyramid schemes are not, like, I don't believe they're legal. I mean, are they not? Aren't they illegal? Yeah. But I mean,
you know, and I think like the makeup example that I used, I think there are legit things like that, that there's some businesses that are like that. Like, you have people who sell underneath you.
Sure.
I think at some point everyone's gotten caught up in one of those in some way. But, you know, then this guy gets rich and he has some issues with sexual addiction.
Yeah, and control. And yeah. Yeah, it's exactly. It's quite a story. Let's continue on with the Keith Raniere story. We'll jump into the maybe some sense making, I don't know, early life and career of Keith Raniere, the founder of NXIVM, here on the Dark Side of Wikipedia. Keith Raniere was born on August 26, 1960, to James Raniere, a New York City advertiser, and his wife, Vera, a ballroom dancing instructor. Rainier's father recalls that Vera drank more than she should have in adulthood. Keith himself privately described his mother as an alcoholic. When Rainier was five, he and his family relocated from Brooklyn to Suffern, New York, when he was around 8 years old. His parents separated. From the late 1960s to the early 1970s, Rainier attended a Waldorf school. One classmate recalled an incident in which he had unwittingly shared compromising information about one of his sisters in front of Rainier. And aged around 10. According to her recollection, Rainier had told her, "You know, it's like I have this little bottle of poison I can hold over your head. I just don't think your parents or your sister would be very happy if I told them." She claims Rainier would call me sometimes and say, "Little bottles, little bottles." Rainier attended a public junior high school and attended Suffern High School from 9th grade before transferring to Rockland County Day School in Connors, New York. He graduated in June of 1978. 2 months prior to his 18th birthday. As an adult, Rainier reported that he read Isaac Asimov's mind-controlling-themed work Second Foundation at the age of 12 and credited the novel with inspiring his work in Nexium. Rainier's former partner, Barbara Bochery, has shared stories about his childhood, which he claims to have been told by his father, were James. "What we did is we told Keith about how gifted and how intelligent he was. And he said it was almost like a switch went off, and suddenly overnight it turned on into like a Jesus Christ complex, and that he was superior and better than everybody, like he was a deity. He said it was that dramatic, that profound. He said it went right to his head." Bochery herself likewise recalled a story about a 13-year-old Rainier's relationship with girls. Dozens of young girls were calling the house, and Rainier's mother was overhearing his conversations with him, where he was telling every single girl the same thing. "I love you. You're the special one. You're important. You are the only one in my life, and I love you." And she says he's saying this to all these girls. He's clearly lying because all of them are not special. In 1982, Rainier graduated from Rasselyer Polytechnic Institute with a 2.26 GPA. According to reporting by Times Union, in 1984, the 24-year-old Rainier became sexually involved with 15-year-old Gina Melita after the two met in a theater group. After ending their relationship, Melita introduced him to her friend Gina Hutchinson, also 15. Gina Hutchinson's sister Heidi told the Times Union that Rainier became sexually involved with Gina. After Heidi found Rainier climbing into Gina's bedroom window and confronting them, Rainier told her that Gina was a Buddhist goddess meant to be with him. Gina dropped out of school and continued her relationship with Rainier, working at his company's consumers byline for a time. She later died by suicide. In June 1988, the Times Union profiled Rainier, reporting on his membership in the Mega Society after he achieved a high score on founder Ronald K. Hoeflin's Mega Test, an unsupervised 48-question test published in April of 1985 issue of Omni Magazine. Although the Mega Test had been widely criticized as not being properly validated, the 1989 edition of the Guinness Book of World Records, the last to indicate a category for highest IQ, described the Hoeflin Research Group as the most exclusive ultra-high IQ society and identified Rainier, Marilyn Vos Savant, and Eric Hart as the highest scoring members of the group. So that's where we're at so far into education. Next, we're going to jump into the world of multi-level marketing and see how successful or unsuccessful Mr. Rainier was in that way of the world. Thoughts thus far?
What's interesting? Well, there's a lot of things interesting and sick at the same
time. Yeah.
But obviously, this personality trait in him goes way back.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the way he was treating young girls and, you know, and then having a relationship when he's an adult with a 15-year-old. But, you know, just telling them all, "Oh, I love you. You're wonderful, blah,
yeah.
blah, blah."
And no, there's no feeling there about it. And he's able to do it without realizing he's hurting people.
And probably, I'm sure, getting some kind of feeling of power and satisfaction,
yeah.
and control.
Sure.
So really it goes, he was probably a sick person his entire life.
Sure. And just never, it was never put into check. And at some point, just telling people things of and controlling them that way was never enough. I mean, what do you eventually do? Excuse me. After that, you know, then that's where it sometimes goes down the world, the, you know, road of killers and murderers. But in his case, the next step, it seemed to be, was branding, which we'll get into in just a little bit. It's a dark story.
It is really dark.
But let's continue on with the story of Keith Raniere and Nexium. Through the 1980s, Raniere was also involved with Amway, the multi-level marketing company. Heidi Hutchinson recalled that during the late 80s, Raniere was fascinated by Amway, Scientology, and neuro-linguistic programming. Raniere also worked as a computer programmer for New York State's Division of Parole, Consumer Byline, Inc. By 1990, Raniere founded his own multi-level marketing company, Consumers Byline, Inc. It was at CBI pitch meeting that Raniere met Tony Natalie, who subsequently became a top seller for the organization, along with her then husband. Natalie and her son later moved to Clifton Park to be near Raniere. Her marriage ended shortly thereafter. Natalie and Raniere dated for the next 8 years. CBI shut down in 1993 after being investigated by 20 states that year. New York filed a lawsuit alleging the organization was a pyramid scheme. In 1996, Raniere signed a consent order permanently barring him from promoting, offering, or granting participation in a chain distribution scheme and ordering him to pay a $40,000 fine. In 1994, Raniere created National Health Network, a multi-level seller of vitamins. That business failed in 1999. In the mid-90s, Raniere and partner Tony Natalie operated a health product store. In 1998, Keith Raniere's then-partner Tony Natalie met Nancy Salzman, a nurse and trained practitioner of hypnotism and neuro-linguistic programming. Natalie recalled, Nancy said, "You're so wonderful. How can I help you?" So I said, "Well, you can help me with my boyfriend. He had grandiose ideas and his hours were becoming erratic again." She listened and she said, "Oh, that's easy. I can help you. He's a sociopath." They met, and 4 days later, she came out with the glazed eyes and gave me the, "You don't know who he is," and I was like, wow, there goes another one. Also in 1998, Raniere met Christy Marie Malenkos, a recently divorced mother who had won the title of Miss Michigan in 1995. She recalled that Raniere explained how there was a profound event that would often happen to the women who became intimate with him. Sometimes they would even see a blue light. Ultimately, I agreed to be intimate with Keith, and it was just as he said. I even saw a blue light, but I don't think I told him so. I remember thinking, wow, my brain is really susceptible to the power of suggestion. Raniere and Salzman founded Executive Success Programs, a personal development company offering a range of techniques aimed at self-improvement. A few years later, the program was rebranded under the name Nexium. Raniere adopted the title of Vanguard from a favorite arcade game in which the destruction of one's enemies increased one's own power. Much of Nexium was influenced by the teachings of Ayn Rand, one of Raniere's favorite authors. In 1999, Raniere's 8-year relationship with Tony Natalie ended. Natalie would subsequently claim to have been the victim of harassment. In a January 2003 ruling, federal judge Robert Littlefield implied Raniere was using a legal suit to harass his former partner. Wrote Littlefield, "This matter smacks of the jilted fellow's attempt at revenge or retaliation against his former girlfriend, with many attempts at tripping her up along the way." In 2002, Raniere and Salzman succeeded in recruiting members of the influential Bronfman family, heirs to the billion-dollar Seagram's fortune. Sarah Bronfman initially became involved, followed by sister Claire Bronfman. Their father, Edgar Bronfman Sr., took a Nexium course the following year. Gina Hutchinson had been sexually involved with Raniere as an adult from 1984 when she was 15 years of age. In August 2002, Gina resumed contact with Raniere and began participating in Nexium ESP. According to her surviving sister, Heidi, on October 11, 2002, Gina Hutchinson was found dead of a gunshot wound to her head. The death was ruled a suicide. Christy Marie Snyder was a 35-year-old environmental consultant who, in November of 2002, paid $7,000 to enroll in a 16-day personal development course founded and conducted in Anchorage, Alaska by ESP Nexium leader Nancy Salzman. The following January, Snyder traveled to visit Rainier and other leaders in New York. Snyder's mother recalled that her daughter had come to believe she was responsible for the Columbia shuttle disaster and thought Keith was incredible. Snyder, accompanied by her partner Heidi Clifford, signed up for a second 16-day session in Anchorage. Clifford later reported that on the 10th day of the course, Snyder began claiming to be pregnant with Rainier's child. In 2019, it was revealed that Claire Bronfman had claimed Snyder was indeed pregnant with Rainier's child. According to a former IT consultant, Clifford recalled, "I was told by a Nexium instructor not to bring her to the hospital, as it makes me feel really bad." On February 6, 2003, Snyder was last seen leaving the Nexium seminar, in which she claimed she had become pregnant with Rainier's child. On February 8, her vehicle was found 120 miles away in Stewart, Alaska. Police recovered a note that read as follows: "I attended a course called Executive Success Programs based out of Anchorage, Alaska and Albany, New York. I was brainwashed and my emotional center of the brain was killed or turned off. I still have feeling in my external skin, but my inner organs are rotting. I'm sorry, life. I didn't know I was already dead. May me persist into the future." A separate page added, "No need to search for my body." A witness at Rainier's 2019 trial testified that after Christian Snyder disappeared, Rainier paid $24,000 to obtain the password to her email account. In October of 2003, Rainier was featured cloaked in the shadows on the cover of Forbes magazine, accompanied by the appellation "the world's strangest executive coach." The devastating cover story, penned by Michael Freedom and entitled "Cult of Personality," has been described as a gold mine of previously unpublished information. The cover story discusses Rainier's title Vanguard and detailed his business, Consumer Byline, which collapsed amid accusations of being a pyramid scheme. The cover story includes a quote from billionaire Edgar Bronfman accusing the organization of being a cult. Vanity Fair subsequently reported on the cover story's impact with the group. People at Nexium were stunned, expecting a positive story. The top ranks had spoken to Forbes, including Rainier, Salzman, and Sarah Bronfman. What upset them above all were Edgar Bronfman's remarks. According to Vanity Fair, the Forbes article was a turning point in Rainier's relationship with Edgar Bronfman. "That's," says one woman, "was when Edgar Bronfman became Nexium's enemy." A witness at Rainier's trial later testified that Edgar Bronfman's computer was compromised and his emails monitored by group members for a period of years. And in 2005, there was a relationship with a minor, Camilla. According to the 2019 trial testimony, in 2005, Rainier allegedly commenced a sexual relationship with a 15-year-old named Camilla. And then there's commodities trading. Barbara Boucher spent $1.6 million covering losses of commodity trades, which Rainier made in her name from January 05 to late 2007. Rainier lost nearly $70 million in commodities trading. Rainier suggested to Claire Bronfman that the losses were due to market manipulation by her father. Beginning in August of 05, the Bronfman sisters covered the losses, ultimately using $150 million of their funds in support of Rainier and his organization. Eager to distance themselves from cult allegations in the press, Nexium members sought the endorsement of the Dalai Lama, spending $2 million on the project. 8 years later, it would be revealed Sarah Bronfman had a 2009 sexual relationship with Lama Tenzin Dohin, the Dalai Lama's gatekeeper, who arranged the appearance, who was a monk and had taken a vow of celibacy. Amid accusations of corruption, Dohin was replaced. On May 6, 2009, the Dalai Lama traveled to Albany to give a talk. During the event, he presented Rainier with a white scarf on stage. The Dalai Lama additionally wrote the foreword to the book The Sphinx, which Rainier co-authored in 2009. The prior year, Rainier had co-authored his first book, Odin and the Sphinx. In 2009, a group of Rainier's associates called the Nexium Nine broke with Rainier and his organization, citing concerns about unethical practices and the alleged abuse of his leadership status to sexually manipulate women in the organization. One of the dissenters, Barbara Boucher, has been Rainier's partner for 9 years. In March of 2010, Rainier learned that Inner Circle member Daniela had kissed another man. According to a 2019 trial testimony, upon hearing the news, Rainier locked himself in a bathroom. Thereafter, he ordered that Daniela be confined to a room with only a mattress and video cameras, where she was held for almost 2 years.
2 years.
So it sounds like what a lovely place to be. Nexium is where you want to be.
I don't understand how, like, I'm all pro self-improvement, don't get me wrong. But like, if somebody said, you know, hey, we've got this course, $7,000 in Alaska.
Yeah.
Which I guess is you have to pay transportation on top of that and food and all the rest of the stuff that would go with it.
Yeah.
I'd be like, hell no, I'll read a book before I do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, if people have that kind of money, then he can lure them in and then he takes their money. Like the whole commodities thing, when I was listening to the podcast, can I plug the podcast if somebody wants to listen to it?
Yeah.
It's really good. It's not like we're getting anything out of it.
No, it's not an advertisement. It's just friendly.
Uncover is the name of it, and it's season one. But like the commodities thing, I'm like, did he really lose all that money? Or was that just a scam? Because I know the one woman, he like, let's invest $50,000 and we'll split it. And then he's like, oh, and by the way, I need to borrow my $25,000 from you.
Yeah.
But I'll give it back to you. And then next thing you know, they're like, oh my God, people are coming after us. We have to pay this tremendous sum of money. And again, they're coming after us again. And so he's taking all this money. Is he really losing it, or was he just putting it in the bank for him?
Yeah.
Because like he was really bad at commodities trading.
Yeah.
Obviously, if that was really what he was doing.
I don't know.
I just think he manipulated everybody around him.
It's crazy. I mean, I am baffled. I mean, I've like six episodes into the documentary I'm watching on HBO called The Vow. And it hasn't even touched on some of these things. And some of it, I mean, some of them are smaller pieces, but it's just some of the small pieces add into the story and just like, really, it's like icing or sprinkles on the cake of like, my God, like.
Because well, like, I think like the woman they interview in that Uncover podcast, I think too, you get into it and then you're so far into it and you've spent so much money that there's all these people. This is your whole family.
Yeah.
And so if you can't really walk away because these are the people you know. And then you can't spend all that money and walk away from it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's some weird psychological issues with that. Because like this woman, I don't think ever had sex with him. But she was very involved. Like she didn't, these were her best friends and she didn't want to let him down either.
Yeah. Makes you really want to like start studying some of the stuff he studied and see, just experiment. Can you start a cult? That's a new reality show. Can you start a cult? We give 5 people all the tools that former cult leaders used to start a cult and 1 year. And at the end of 1 year, see who has the most successful cult with the most members. New on Fox.
And I think you have to find someone who's very like a narcissist who has no problem stealing money and taking money from people. And I mean, this guy had all of the personality traits you need.
You would have to.
Anyone can start a cult. You have to be a certain type of person.
The thing that would stop most from starting a cult is having a conscience and realizing, you know, you can't be doing this and you can't be manipulating people in these sort of ways. But cult leaders are different that way because outwardly they show a lot of humanity, and they show what you idyllically would want in a person, when on the inside they're feeling nothing of what they're showing. It is all a show. And
are you describing Jerry Falwell Jr.?
Well, that too. Well, I don't even think
that is not a cult, by the way.
He never really showed much humanity.
But like, there are people who are, you know, going to that university for all the right reasons.
I know.
And they believe in what they're studying, and, you know, they're living by a certain ethics. And he's not at all, it seems like.
No. I feel bad for those people who are at that university.
Me too. I hope they're able to figure that out.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I mean, those people had, for the most part, nothing to do with anything.
No. I mean,
but you got this.
But you get that right person in charge. And I just think that a lot of times money corrupts.
Oh, completely. Yeah. I mean, that's it's all he knew his whole life. And there was, God knows what else went on. But yeah, I mean, and then he had money. And then it's just, I mean,
there, it seems like that's what a lot of these people have in common.
No grounding narcissists. And that's the thing. To be a cult leader, you have to almost be a narcissist, because you can't have feeling to pull the job off. If you knew that you were not, at the end of the day, nobody was going to be hurt by starting a cult. I can see the dynamics of how it could be done, and what you could say and what you could do to start a cult, and probably get it off the ground. But having a conscience, I know I could never do that. But I could see the right type of person, if they had that mind, if they could understand it and had the no conscience thing. That's where you get the crazy cult leader. I'm the one who can understand it, but I don't have the personality to do it. I can just do a podcast, but I get it. I can understand the psychology of how this works. And it's scary, because it's not that hard, I think. I mean, the closest thing I can ever say to doing on the air was I did a fake bit as a fake psychic a time or two. But even that was like so out there. It was Chet Jameson was this character that played bowling, and depending on how the pins lined up, he could tell the future or tell you something from a dead loved one.
Oh my god.
And there were times where I played it. I
made money for that guy, because that would be fun, and I could find out about a dead loved one.
It was funny. And and the thing is, it was like, I honestly, and I thought most of the people were in on the joke, but when I look back on some of the tapes, I think some of the people really honestly thought this guy was talking to the dead.
Brilliant.
But the thing is, it was not hard to do. It was not hard to do the line of, I'm getting the letter S, and they'll give you something. People want that information, and it's not hard to pull off. I did that bit back in the day when there was that, was it John Edwards? Not John Edwards.
John Edwards did that.
Yeah. That sort of a show. And it was like speaking to the dead and all that. And I believe there are certain people who can, but there's
Teresa Caputo is amazing at it. I saw her and I love her.
But I'm also saying it's not hard to fake it either. I think there's totally legit, but I'm telling you honestly, from doing that bit on the air, it's not hard to fake it, and it's not hard to get people to believe. It's scarily not hard to get people to believe. And that's, it was just like, wow, this is like, it's so obviously not real, but so many people are so desperate to get this communication. And I don't want to do this anymore, because I don't want to hurt anybody. But it was just like scary with a bit of just how people were just trying to grasp onto that. And I get it, but it's like, wow, that's how you can go down a dark path or be led down a path, when you're not really even realizing it. Anyway, let's continue on with more of this fine young man's story, Keith Raniere and the Nexium crash. In November 2010, Vanity Fair published an article titled "The Heiress and the Cult," in which Raniere's former partner, Tony Natale, recalled that Raniere had insisted he kept the body of her dead puppy in her garage freezer and look at it daily. That same month, the New York Post reported on the existence of a video in which Raniere is heard telling two followers, "I've had people killed because of my beliefs or because of their beliefs." In a 2010 Albany Times Union article, Nexium former coaches characterized students as prey for Rainier to satisfy either his gambling or sexual proclivities. In 2011, Tony Natalie filed documents in federal court alleging that she had been repeatedly raped by Rainier. Kristen Keefe, of the longtime partner of Rainier and mother of his son, Galen, the child born circa 2007, had earlier been reported to be an orphan adopted by Rainier and Keefe rather than their biological child. In 2010, it was reported that Rainier had ordered that the child be kept away from peers and that he was being cared for by nannies speaking five different languages. In February of 2014, Keefe broke with Rainier and his group after she fled the region with her son. An email bearing her name explained, "I have full legal custody of Galen. Keith was experimenting on him. I had met with Galen away." Keith publicly described Rainier as dangerous. In 2015, it was reported that Keith had alleged that Rainier directed Canadian investigative firm Canaprobe to obtain financial information on six federal judges, a U.S. senator from the state of New York, as well as a reporter, an editor, and the publisher of the Times Union. That same year, Keefe further alleged that Rainier had planned to lure his critics to Mexico with an invitation to an anti-cult conference. Once in Mexico, the critics were to be arrested on false charges by an order of a judge who had been bribed. In 2005, Rainier personally sued AT&T and Microsoft, alleging they had infringed on his patents. The following year, the case was dismissed with prejudice. The trial court ruled that Rainier's conduct throughout this litigation, culminating in his untruthful testimony at the hearing on the motion to dismiss, demonstrates a pattern of obstruction and bad faith. Rainier was sanctioned and ordered to pay $450,000 in attorney's fees. On June 5, 2017, Frank Perlato was the first to report that there was a secret sorority called DOS, and the women known as slaves were branded with Rainier's initials using a hot cottering pen. On October 18, 2017, the New York Times published a story about the slaves and branding and reported that the slaves were required to provide nude photos or other potentially damaging information about themselves if they wished to join. At trial, the prosecution introduced a 2017 recording of a private meeting with DOS slaves, in which Rainier acknowledged that the branded monogram, as it is right now, is very directly related to my initials. The group discussed how to obscure the connection to Rainier's initials. At Rainier's trials, DOS member Nicole recalled that when she and Rainier discussed her decision to leave the group, he said, "You guys think you have it so bad? But this is nothing compared to other subcultures." In the wake of the article, Rainier fled to Mexico, accompanied by a few members of his inner circle. On January 18th of 2018, a search warrant was issued for Rainier's email account. February 14th, an agent of the FBI filed a criminal complaint against Rainier with the U.S. District Court of the Eastern District of New York. In March of 2018, Rainier was arrested by Mexican authorities in a luxury villa outside Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. Lauren Salzman later recalled that the arrest interfered with a planned group sex session where police arrived. She and Rainier barricaded themselves in the master suite, with Rainier attempting to hide a walk-in closet. Rainier was indicted on a variety of charges related to DOS, including his sex trafficking, conspiracy for sex trafficking, and conspiracy to commit forced labor. The indictment alleged that at least one woman who was coerced into sex with Rainier, who forced DOS members to undergo the branding ritual alleged by Edmondson and others. United States Attorney Richard Donahue stated that Rainier created a secret society of women with whom he had sex and had branded with his initials, coercing them with the threat of releasing their highly personal information and taking their assets. Rainier's federal trial began May 7, 2019. Prosecution witnessed, including Laura Salzman, Nexium filmmaker Mark Vicente, victims Sylvia, Daniela, and Nicole, and cult educator Rick Allen Ross. The defense rested without calling any witnesses. On June 29, 2019, the jury found Rainier guilty in all charges after 5 hours of deliberation. Rainier was found guilty of sexual exploitation of a child and possession of child pornography with regard to minor victim Camilla, sex trafficking of Nicole, attempted sex trafficking of Jay, identity theft against Edgar Brofman James, Ashanta Konea, and Pam Kraffitz, trafficking for labor and services of Daniela, forced labor of Nicole, conspiracy to alter records for use in an official proceeding, sex trafficking conspiracy, forced labor conspiracy, racketeering conspiracy, and wire fraud conspiracy. Rainier, who maintains his innocence, is scheduled to be sentenced on October 27, 2020. Prosecutors are seeking a life sentence. A number of Rainier's alleged lovers suffered untimely deaths. Gina Hutchinson was found dead of a gunshot wound in the head. Kristen Snyder disappeared and was last seen at a NXIVM event. Living girlfriends Barbara Jeske and Pam Kravitz both died of cancer. Rainier partner Kristen Keefe survived cervical cancer. In 2009, Rainier was filmed claiming, "I've had people killed because of my beliefs." In 2019, Investigation Discovery aired a documentary titled The Lost Women of NXIVM, speculating Rainier committed homicide. According to that program, a woman who lived with Rainier and developed bladder cancer submitted a hair sample. That sample reportedly revealed the evidence of dangerous levels of bismuths and barium. Wow.
Yeah, so, I'm not to that point in my podcast.
Me either. It's like, I knew the shit was dark, but I didn't know it got that dark. I mean, it just keeps going and going. I mean, I thought, okay, he's a cult leader. Because where I'm at on The Vow right now, it's just cult leader. And, you know, some people are starting to really kind of seem to come to some conclusions here. I didn't realize all the other things that happened then to try and catch the guy.
Well, and that whole branding thing is just sick.
Yeah.
Because the woman in this podcast, she didn't even realize what the design was.
Yeah.
And like, it's his initials in the Allison Mack.
Yeah.
The act, like that, that's just sick.
It is.
Like, you're branding a human with your initials. That's, oh.
What happened to Allison Mack?
I don't know, but I think that she is still in the process of, I think she has charges against her.
Mack's pleading guilty to racketeering charges of April 29 and is awaiting sentencing, so.
But, you know, I just, I mean, I guess I see how it can happen. And it's slowly, and you're groomed, and then you've spent all this money, and now you don't want to let your friends down or whatever. But I just don't see, like, you know, they spun it as like, we're having this girl get together thing. And but it was even darker than that. It's like, now, because it's all about learning these different lessons you need to learn in life, this whole process. So now I'm going to be your master and you're my slave.
Yeah.
And we're going to go get tattooed, basically. But it's branding. And
Some didn't even, it wasn't even that straightforward.
It was really sick, too. Like she could text him at any time of the day or night, and they had 1 minute to reply. And if they didn't reply in time, the whole group was punished in some way. So that just gets into this whole control thing. And then she's your master and you're her slave, and then you get slaves underneath you and you're their master.
Yeah.
When would you go, sign me up for that?
It's really interesting when you're listening to this going, well, how do people not see this coming? I've not listened to your documentary, but if you watch the documentary The Vow on HBO and you watch the first episode, they do a really good job of selling to you this Keith Rainier character and NXIVM, and showing, wow, look how powerful this has been. Look how positive this has been. And then in the last 2 minutes is where it changes. And it's like, oh, shit gets dark. And the first 45 minutes you're sitting there going, wow, that looks really appealing. That looks like it could be really good and positive. And then you go, oh, that's how they got sucked in. And it takes a good, it really is a good job of demonstrating just how you can get into the mindset of like, oh, okay, this is a helpful thing. This is a, like, there's no talk of a sex cult or branding or anything in those first meetings or anything like that. It's their version of Scientology and doing the e-meters. You know, it's just they had very like, no, just lay back. We're going to do some free courses about, you know, bettering yourself here and there. Okay, great. You know, that sounds safe. And that's how I think it sucked people in. It just, it never got to the level of Scientology in terms of growth or anything of that nature. But again, it's like some of the original baseline concepts are basic concepts of, you know, just being good to yourself and being good to others and being disciplined and things like that, but, you know, just worded differently, really. But it starts there because it does appeal to almost everybody. These are things almost anyone would agree on. And then once you get them there, then you just keep going. You keep adding a little bit here and there that's a little bit off, but they already trust you, so it must be right. This is what I'm missing. And then you just keep going and going and going, and eventually you're so far off the damn path you don't even know it because you've been inched off so slowly.
And so many people, well, all of us are looking for something in this life.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't, I mean, nobody feels complete. You're always looking for some kind of way to improve, or some, you know, you're in a rut. You need a way out of the rut, or you need a new job. You know, there's just things. And, you know, these people got into it for all the right reasons.
Yeah. There really are. There's a lot that got into it for the right reasons. And you have to wonder, I mean, once some of them did eventually know more what was going on than the others, obviously. But
there's an upper tier in this group that I think they are as sick as he is.
Yeah, the ones that continue to go along with it, because there are part of that upper tier that got out immediately. They're like, fuck no, we're not doing this shit show. And the ones that left, you know, those are the ones that I think, you know, obviously they had no idea on how dark things were getting. But wow, what a story this one is. And it's going to be one, it's, you know, for intents and purposes, the cult's over. But it's going to be interesting to see the sentencing and what else comes out about this story over the next couple of years, because we're just at the tail end of it. The sentencing for him hasn't even been done yet as of the recording of this episode. So it'll be interesting where all of that ends up lying. That'll wrap up today's episode of The Dark Side of Wikipedia. If you like our program, be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. Let your friends know that we exist too. We greatly appreciate that. Until next time, for Carol and all of us at The Dark Side of Wikipedia, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.